Nature Now is welcoming Lonnie Grinnell Greninger from the Jamestown Sklallam Tribe. She serves as Tribal Council Vice Chair. One of her many duties includes building relationships to further education and resources between Washington State and the tribe. She also received her Sklallam language certification, and she says she will now introduce herself in Sklallam.
Hatning sin siam nis jayacha siam. Ait squatchi siam nis jayacha. Yuch siam snach statitlam nus kayam sin. That means good day, my honored friends and relatives, Siam Nishjayacha. And then my Indian given name is Yuchsia, which was given to me by my grandmother when I was 15. And as far as the studies that I can tell, that root of my name means to invite. And I think that's fitting for me, especially since I am a bridge builder and I love forming relationships and sharing my culture and sharing just sharing who we are with others in the community at large around us. So just very happy to be here today. Hatning sin siam.
Today we return happily to part two of Lonnie Greninger's presence here, discussing the Jamestown Sklallam language and her ancestor, the one we still call Chief Chetsamoka, but maybe you won't after you hear this interview. And we started a little bit talking about the trail dedicated to him and to the stories of the strong people. It was dedicated in 2019, and it is a trail in Port Townsend dedicated to the history of the Sklallam people here. So my first question, Lonnie, is how was this trail dedicated for all the tribal members to have full access?
Yes, it's a wonderful question. So we know that we have tribal members and then also other members of the greater surrounding communities. We all have different abilities. You know, some of us are, you know, able to walk, some need wheelchairs, some need walkers. There's all sorts of abilities out there. And we wanted this trail to be enjoyed by anyone of any ability. And so we made the trail walkable, we made it bikeable, and we made it drivable. And so we so want to connect with the community of Katai and any guests that come to Katai, you know, to know who we are and the roots of Katai, you know, Port Townsend, and who were the people that lived there, you know, and what were our favorite spots? What were our, you know, most recognizable spots? What were our, you know, so when we were designing this and dedicating it, that was really the heart behind it, is we want everyone to have the opportunity to learn about who we are. And, you know, for our tribal citizens in particular and our descendants, that's a huge, huge part of the journey of finding our, I'm going to call it Indianness, you know, the Indian part of us, you know, that's a part of our identity that it's ongoing, you know, figuring out what it means to be Sklallam. And when you're able to connect with your roots and find out a little more about what your ancestors did and how they were and how they thought and what they ate and what they did on a daily basis, you know, it just, I don't know. I know for me personally, it has filled up a hole inside of me that I didn't get in public school. You know, we weren't really teaching much on Indian history. And frankly, you know, local Indian history. Yeah.
Right.
Right. And the Indian history that we got, you know, it was mostly about tribes on the East Coast or in the Midwest, you know, the ones that were interacting most with the first colonies of the United States. And that makes sense when you're teaching United States history, right? You focus on places that are pertinent to you as a sovereign nation. But, you know, so this trail was also a chance for the Nusqayam, the Sklallam people, to say, this is our history. And maybe you weren't taught that in the local school districts. And that's okay. You know, here is our part of the responsibility to teach you where you are living. And where the Nusqayam come from, or at least a portion of the Nusqayam, where they come from.
A question that sort of starts this also. The Sklallam people are called the strong people, which is very evocative of both their history and their future. How did that come to be, and how does it sound in the Sklallam language?
Yes. Okay. So the way that I pronounce it is Nusqayam. Nusqayam. So the legend behind where we got our name is there was a big potlatch back in the days of our ancestors. And we had all the tribes from the local area coming to visit. And we went to this host tribe for the potlatch, and they had games. And the games were usually games of strength, games of cleverness. And one of the games was to take a very large tree log and take it and, you know, see how far you could throw it.
Oh my
God. Yes. And I was like, wow, these are interesting games. But what ended up happening is, you know, tribe after tribe would go and they'd try to lift the log. They try to push the log, roll the log. Well, the Nuskayam, we had a moment of cleverness and we actually took the log to the water and allowed the water to carry the log for us for most of the journey of where it needed to go from place A to place B. And so when it was in the water, we were able then to gather all of our people under the log and get the log on our shoulders.
Oh.
And so from there, we were able to all, you know, say, Natsu, Chessa, Heef, you know, 1, 2, 3, lift, you know. and from there, you know, having that, the water helped us, you know, get it on your shoulders. And then we were able to walk this log to the finish line, so to speak. And from there, the other tribes were chanting around us, Nuskayam, Nuskayam. And so that just, it stuck to our people, you know, that we are the strong people, the strong people. So that's where our name comes from.
It's extremely evocative of
yes.
both the history and the future.
Yes, it is.
The trail, the Cheech Mahon Trail, honors a particular person. And in English, people are still calling him Chetsamoka. What's about that?
When you engage with non-native settlers who don't know your language, we found often that our names, our native names, were changed to English names. Cheech Mahon, one of his names, his English names, was Duke of York. You know, that's very much after the English kingdom, right?
Uh-huh.
One of his brothers, his older brothers, was named King George. You know, one of Chief Cheech Mahon's wives, you know, was Queen Victoria, but we call her Siamitza.
Uh-huh.
So I've heard two perspectives on these English names. One perspective I've heard was, oh, well, you're a chief, so let me try to put this in my terms. What do I know about leaders from my era? And a lot of it was the royalty. That seems to be something that non-natives connected with because that's where they came from, right? The theory being they were trying to translate that concept of sovereignty. Okay, a king over his people is the same as a chief over his people. The other interesting theory I've heard was that the names were used as a term to mock our leaders. You know, oh, you're like a King George. Oh, you're like a Duke of York. Huh? So I've heard both. I would like to think that it was the first theory. No matter how it came about, the names stuck. And so Chetsamoka, in particular, that name was easier to pronounce with the English tongue than Cheech Mahon. And so, you know, even Jamestown, we caught ourselves saying Chetsamoka all the time until we learned, you know, the language a little bit more here of recent. And now that we know how to pronounce those letters, we can say his name correctly. So now even us at Jamestown, we're learning how to say his name properly.
Well, I really wondered about it because obviously people are still saying, let's go have a picnic at Chetsamoka Park,
yes.
Which is, that's a non-existent person in a sense. But part of the local behavior in terms of thinking, oh, well, we're honoring him by saying his name, which we aren't. So I think that that's one of the wonderful things about this trail and all of the indications and descriptions of the history of the people here. You are a certified teacher of the Sklallam language. Can you tell us how you got to be that and how you studied and how you're now working with other people to help them?
Absolutely. So I'll first start off with my growing up had Nuskayamutsin in it. My grandmother, Elaine Grinnell, her
yes.
name is Quilsid in our language. She actually studied the language a little bit. Now what's hard about my family's personal history is that the language stopped at my great-great-grandparents. It was the times. Unfortunately, the world, the local area even was not friendly toward Native Americans. And so a lot of it, a lot what was pushed on us was don't speak your language anymore. speak English, speak English, be American, be American. I mean, it was pushed so hard as a matter of survival. So I don't blame my great, great grandparents for saying it's time for you to speak English only. My grandmother, she tried to engage her grandparents because she could hear them speaking fluently in the other room. And then when she'd enter the room, they would stop and switch to English.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Wow. And a lot of it, you know, was, like I said, it was about survival. It was for the love of the future generations. If I want my generations to survive and this language is going to keep them from that, you know, I can just hear the thoughts, you know, in their minds, you know, I want my grandchildren to be welcomed. I want my grandchildren to have relationships and friends. I want them to interact well with non-natives. And if this is the way to do it, then let's do it. So my great-grandmother, it was not her first language. My grandmother, it was not her first language. English was. My father, English was the first language. And my language is English. So, but my grandmother did her best to teach us songs and certain vocabulary words in Nusaymutsin, and that stuck with me. It really did. And then when we got into our teen programs here at the tribe, I was part of one of the first groups. We were teaching our teenagers how to introduce themselves in Nusaymutsin, like, you know, Yuchsien Sna, Yuchsia is my name, Statitlam Nusaymutsin, I am Jamestown Squalum, you know. And so when you're at a public event, you always said that. It was just instilled within us. But that carried me through, it carried me through my high school and college years. What the sad part about not having that language in my life, there is some historic trauma attached to that. You know, a piece of your Indian identity is taken from you when you take your language away. And I remember being in high school, I had a chance to learn Nusaymutsin, just like any other, in quote, foreign language, you know, that's offered at a high school. And Jamie Valadez, who's a Lower Elwha Klallam elder and certified teacher, she was teaching. And my dad, very excited, comes to me when I'm in high school. You have a chance. You have a chance to learn the language. You know, I didn't get to learn. Now's your chance. You do it. You do it. And I remember my little 17-year-old self, you know, as broken as I was back then, looking at my father and saying, what is speaking Indian ever going to do for me?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And wow. And, you know, as I look back on that now, I go, oh, that's somebody who has a broken identity and doesn't understand.
That is so powerful. Your grandmother, Elaine Grinnell, is known for storytelling.
Yes.
And has become rather, I would say, notable for bringing the language and the stories forward. So at this point, you and she must be relating in a way that you couldn't before.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is she got certified in the language. She tried to keep going, but she was in her older years and without anybody else to talk to, you know, in Nusaymutsin, it's hard to put it in daily use. Uh-huh. So she was our first Jamestown certified in Nusaymutsin to be able to teach it. I want to say that was in 2003, about when she was certified. I'm the second in our tribe. So I was certified in 2019. She loves hearing me speak, although she tells me I talk too fast. And I'm like, oh, Grandma, that's my American coming out. You know, we're always talking fast all the time. Hands are moving and we're talking fast. But yes, we do relate differently. And she loves watching me open up ceremonies. She loves hearing me pray, you know, in the language. She loves hearing the songs that I sing because I write songs now, too, because I can add the language. She loves that. And I know it fills something up within her that I think, you know, she lost a little bit, but she's, you know, trying to gain it back.
When the totem was dedicated, you spoke and she spoke around its presence in the community. So I'm wondering about the actual detail. What do you have to do to get certified? If you and your grandmother are the only two certified people in this language right now, that means you can teach it to others. Yes.
Yes. So it is a process and it takes time. Now, Port Gamble, Nuhkayet Nusaym, and Lower Elwha, Ethwa Nusaym, they have more certified speakers than we do. They've had very powerful language programs through their tribes. In Jamestown, we're starting to catch up. So while we only have two certified Jamestown speakers at this point, we have many from our sister tribes that surround us. And really, it's the support of Ethwa and Nuhkayet that helped me get certified. So for me, I started at Nuhkayet. So Northwest Indian College has a campus at Port Gamble. And somebody brought to my attention that they teach the Tsleil-Waututh language at Northwest Indian College at the Port Gamble campus. And I was like, gosh, and this was before COVID, right? So everything was allowed to be in person. And, you know, Port Gamble is a 45-minute drive away, super doable. And they said, okay, classes are Monday and Wednesday nights. Anyone interested? And so me and two other tribal citizens, we decided, what the heck? We're just going to try it out and see what we think. And if we find it, you know, beneficial, we'll start telling people like, hey, Jamestown's, let's get over to Port Gamble and take this language. And I did that for 2.5 years. I was over at Northwest Indian College doing classes 2 times a week. And then the other 2 times a week, when I started feeling more comfortable, I created community classes at Jamestown and would teach elders and other young people who couldn't quite afford the time to go over to Port Gamble and come back.
So you became a teacher early on.
I did.
Relationship. Okay.
Yep. It took me about 2.5 years doing classes 4 times a week. I mean, so I was doing ongoing speaking and writing and teaching, you know, and to become a certified teacher, not only do they want you to know the materials, but they want to know that you can teach it to others. That's so there's a basic certification and then there's an advanced certification. I'm currently working on my advanced certification. And so I'm hoping to actually have that certification by the end of this year.
That is a wonderful story. And I think we can move from there to some of the history that the trail represents. I asked you if you had a favorite spot on the trail, and your answer gave me goosebumps, and it still is. And I want you to tell all of us, what is your favorite spot on the trail and why?
Absolutely. So I'm going to cheat a little bit and say I have two.
Okay.
The first one, I'll actually start in order of my involvement in these two particular spots. But the first one is Chetsamoka Park. And that's one of my favorites because, and I know I'm calling it Chetsamoka Park because that's the current label. And I know people understand that and they're familiar with that name. But my family was there for the dedication. And in fact, while I don't remember it, I was there for the dedication of the park. I was only one. And I have a picture and they put it in the newspaper back in 1991. And what's amazing about that picture is it's my family, but it represented 4 generations in one photo. My great grandmother, my grandmother Elaine, my dad, and myself. You know, my dad was holding me. My younger sister wasn't born yet. And then my dad's sister and her oldest daughter were there in the photo as well. But it's just like, here we are, direct descendants of Chief Chichmahan. And this community of Katai is honoring our ancestor. And we're here to say, yes, and all of his values and his philosophies and his beliefs literally run through my family's veins and my personal veins, you know, and then I just think about my second favorite place. You know, we start at Chetsamoka Park. My second favorite place is Sentinel Rock, where there is a statue of Chichmahan. And I was about 6 when that dedication happened of the statue. And I just remember thinking, this is a physical picture of a man I would have never met because generations separated us. And it's just amazing to be able to see what his face potentially looked like and what did his stature potentially look like, and seeing those values and philosophies radiate from a physical picture. And one of the fun things that I have right now is a photo. So it's another photo of me when I'm 6 and I'm hugging his leg, you know, the statue leg. And I just think about what an amazing picture that actually symbolizes for now, you know, what I'm doing in relationships. And that's what he did.
That you are a direct descendant of this astonishing person. And a comment for our listeners, there is a brochure for the trail that has that picture in it. And so it is possible for others who want to see the picture of you holding his leg and starting the bridge to the future.
Right.
That's in the brochure. And at this point, I'm not quite sure where you can get one. They were at the Maritime Center for a while and they may still be there, but we can get more information about that. In any case, this wonderful picture of you holding his leg, you look very composed and thoughtful. And at
this point, you had said that you felt that that time was a sort of prophecy for what you might do and for your hopes of for the future. So tell us about that.
Yes, I think prophecy is a great word. I mean, here he was a bridge builder. He literally stopped war. You know, I think about who he was and what he did. And I had somebody ask me, you know, what are you most grateful for, you know, in your ancestors? And I got, and I just said, gosh, I have one ancestor who literally wanted unity over war. And I mean, I think about that message being powerful even today's, you know, today's world. And I just think about those philosophies carrying forward. And it's like, gosh, you know, here I am hugging his leg as a little 6 year old. And then I grow up and I struggle with my Indian identity. I go get myself educated in the Western knowledge. And then I ended up getting myself educated in a Western setting that brought in indigenous knowledge, which taught me about historic trauma and how, you know, Indian history, you know, has an effect on people, both positive and negative. And then I move back to my tribe and I learn about what it means to be a leader here and what it means to relationship build and bridge build here. And it's just like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what Chetsamoka was doing, you know, Chichmahan. It's just... And so I do think about it. Like it is, it feels like a prophecy to me where it's like, I'm holding onto his leg and it's a symbol of what I was going to become. I would be the one that helps carry his visions and his values forward. And if, you know, thinking about this seven generations value system that you've heard many tribes probably say before, whatever you do right now needs to positively affect your seven generations going forward. Which means the opposite could be true too. If you do something that doesn't, you know, that's not really good, you can affect your generations.
Lonnie, I think what would be helpful right now is to summarize the war he stopped.
Oh, yes. So there was agitation brewing between the Squalum village and Katai and the non-native settlers. And a lot of it had to do with, you know, the Squalums feeling misused, you know, being pushed out of their ancestral territory. And that agitation was brewing rumors of war. I mean, both sides of this was, they were, everyone was preparing for war. Chetsamoka, Chichmahan, he had visited California before. So he actually did some extensive travel. And when he went down to California, he saw how many non-natives there were. And, that for him was really a turning point where he was just thinking to himself, it's not going to serve my people having a war with people that outnumber us. I mean, if we're literally going to carry our generations forward, we cannot go extinct. He brought that knowledge home. And so he was able to speak to both sides. And at the time, it was still unknown, even after him trying to ease the frustrations on both sides. It was unknown whether or not it was going to work. And so what that statue on Sentinel Rock symbolizes is that moment where he was able to report victory. So what he did is he went back to his people and he said, we're outnumbered, but if war is going to happen, you need to take your women and your children and you need to run and you need to hide and your men are going to fight. But if I see that no one is coming for us, if I see that there's no ships coming in, if I see that there's no people trying to walk toward our village, you know, in violence, then I'm going to throw off my blanket and I'm going to give a great shout. And from there, you will know that you are safe. And so that statue is that moment where he's throwing that blanket in victory, saying, no one's coming. There is no war. We're all going to be safe and we're all going to be able to move forward together and learn how to coexist respectfully and responsibly. I love that story.
That is a wonderful, wonderful story. And the just the visual of him throwing off his blanket and saying, this is safety in a sense. A wonderful story. And for you to be his direct ancestor makes it a particular honor for all of us to listen to you telling the story. So
absolutely.
I would like you to say farewell to this show. Say it in Squalum in any way that you want to, and we will honor the language as we sign off.
Absolutely. Hatning sin siam nis jaya chesiam. Hatning sin atien sana hoit kwacha siam ait squachi ait tongan hoit. And what I was saying there is just thank you, honored friends and relatives. Thank you for being here. Hatning Sanati and Sana.
Thank you, Lonnie. Again, you've expanded our knowledge of the Jamestown Tsklallam tribe, and we are going to close today with your blessing song. May it bring health to all in nature.
Oh.